welcome to that 90s Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, James Sunstone. Today, we are reviewing Royal Rumble 1993, hailed from the Arco Arena in Sacramento, California on January 24th. And joining me once again, Mags. How you doing, Mags?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Warm, sticky. Just the air is thick and I'm ready to talk some Royal Rumble.
You know, by the time this review goes out, it'll be pissing down rain. People will be thinking what we're talking about. Yep. And from the UTT podcast, we have Rob and Dan. Lads, how yous doing?
Yeah, doing good. All these British podcasts that are going out during this 3-day period of the heat wave are going to be recording in history this one time that we had trouble with heat. But yeah, we'll be wearing underwear by the time it goes out.
I've literally mentioned it on 3 recordings this weekend.
I would like to echo the sentiments of always ready Max Cardona and Rob. That big ball of fire in the sky can fuck right off. But other than that, I'm good. I'm excited to talk about this show.
Yeah, it's a fun show. I can't remember last time I watched this show, so enjoyed it. But before we get to the show, so yeah, it was held in the Arco Arena, Sacramento, California, January 24th, 93, in front of 16,000 fans. The rest of the media world at the time, on top of the US and the UK music charts, was Whitney Houston, "I Will Always Love You." So, was you fans of that song?
No.
It's finally a song that I know. I remember Rick Waller, who won Pop Idol one year, released a cover of it.
Did he win Pop Idol, or did he not? Did he not get didn't he get like disqualified because he had nodes on his throat, or he had to pull out because he had nodes on his throat, or something like that?
I ain't got a fucking clue. I'm just amazed I remember him.
I remember him going into Big Brother and he grew out like these dreads.
Yeah,
and he looked weird. Yep. And to go beside that, top of the UK movie charts was also The Bodyguard, which I'll be honest, I've never watched it.
Me neither.
Well, wasn't the whole point of The Bodyguard that Kevin Costner preferred the Dolly Parton version of And I Will Always Love You? So,
is that why he ends up getting stabbed?
Well, because he's a bodyguard for Whitney Houston, who's an R&B singer, and he prefers country music, so she does a cover of the Dolly Parton song, which is And I Will Always Love You.
For him?
Yeah, for him, because she's in love with him, so sort of thing.
Out of 4 middle-aged adults, only one of us even knows the storyline to The Bodyguard.
I've never seen it. So,
also, 3 middle-aged adults and one guy who acts middle-aged.
Well, on top of the US movie charts, a movie I have seen, Aladdin.
Hey.
Better songs than The Bodyguard in Aladdin.
Oh, I second that. And on top of the video game charts was still The Mighty Street Fighter 2, which I think had about 3 or 4 re-releases at this point. It was just, it was just the era of Street Fighter, but soon we will be coming to the Mortal Kombat era. We get into the show and welcome return for Gorilla Monsoon, and he's joined by Bobby Heenan. How did you feel about these two being paired up once again?
I mean, they're the classic pair. It's cool to him. This ends up being their last Royal Rumble together as well, which when you think about it is quite sad, but yeah, glad to see the two guys back.
Absolutely. Yep. Just completely unparalleled as a commentary team.
Yeah, we recently recorded, it's still in the bank at the moment, the episode of Nitro just after Gorilla Monsoon died, and Bobby Heenan's paying his tribute to him. And, you know, one of the sort of most real touching things you ever see in wrestling.
Yeah. And we go to our opening match, and it's the Beverly Brothers out first. Have you noticed what they dubbed the theme song? Like, it started off their theme, and then all of a sudden it's it went to them generic theme songs you'd get from WWE 2K.
I still don't know which Beverly Brothers which. I can't tell when they've dubbed the theme song.
So Blake has got the mustache.
Yep. I've just called him Tash and no Tash in my notes.
And they're up against the Steiner brothers, who's making their debut. I love the Steiner brothers. It does make me laugh what Gorilla says. He says the Beverleys have been enjoying great success in the World Wrestling Federation.
I picked up on that straight away. That. What fucking success? These are literally the biggest jobbers in a weak tag division.
The never-ending feud against the Bushwhackers. But how do you feel seeing the Steiner brothers debut? Was you fans of them?
Yeah, I don't think we saw enough of them in WWE or WWF. But yeah, they got a massive pop. You can tell that the crowd knew of them from like WCW, NWA, or whatever. But yeah, it was cool to see a small looking Scott Steiner, and how popular was Rick? I always thought that maybe Scott was the big star of him, but when Rick actually got in the ring, he got massive popped. So yeah, it was really cool to him.
I always think that in this era of the Steiners, they're coming out with the Michigan University letter jackets.
Yeah,
presenting them as academics, and this is Scott Steiner of Scott Steiner Map, and he's been. He's one of the cleverest people on the roster.
I do have in my notes that Scott Steiner's transformation from like all American mulleted, you know, white meat baby face athlete to big Papa Pump has got to go down as one of the weirdest character developments of all time.
Yeah. Pictures next to each other, people wouldn't believe it's the same person.
I'm still not convinced. I think a conspiracy theory needs to start. We've had the one about fake Ultimate Warrior.
And young Scott Steiner actually looks taller than big Papa Pump stock Scott Steiner.
Steroids, you really ain't the only thing that steroids shrink.
Shrink the bones.
That nail weighing him down.
Apparently, one of the original plans, Bruce Pritchard pitched to Vince McMahon, was to bring Scott Steiner in and have him win the Rumble. Like, as is unknown, winning the Rumble, and obviously it didn't go ahead. But I mean, the one thing you can say is Scott Steiner during his early days, he was a great athlete. And I mean, I loved his tiger suplexes and his belly to bellies he was hitting during this match.
Yeah, and that Frankensteiner, that's absolutely glorious. This match was, it started off really for me frustrating with how kind of slow paced it was with the Beverly Brothers kind of a. Trying to avoid getting into any sort of combat. But once Rick got in, got that that crowd pop, and he was like running around the ring like a wild man, it started to really pick up a little bit for me.
The only good thing about the sort of the slow start to the match was that we got the first sort of bit of handbags between Gorilla and Heenan. I don't know exactly what they were arguing about, but Heenan said something about somebody getting the short end of the stick, and Gorilla just yells, "You're gonna get the short end of the stick if you don't stop." And it was like a parent shouting at a mardy toddler.
Gorilla Monsoon said that he could have sold the tickets for the Royal Rumble 50 times over, and Bobby Heenan was like, "Really? If I'd known, I'd have been out front trying to sell mine."
Yep. And now they can't sell the tickets at all. AEW is selling out in New York, and WWE is struggling to sell MSG.
To be fair, they are more expensive than MSG, I would imagine.
It would have been one of the Bobby Heenan things in the world to just have a random fan sat next to Gorilla Monsoon because he'd sold him his feet.
Oh, they're great.
Especially you've got a restricted band. View.
Especially if it was that band who invaded AEW Dynamite the other day, the Jericho and MJF segment.
He followed, well, we were mutuals on
same
Twitter.
Here.
What a loony.
He's commented on no end of my posts as well. He's actually a fan of the channel, so shout out. made yourself famous.
He did it to get in the good graces of Jim Cornette. It actually worked in the totally opposite way. He got blocked by Jim Cornette, so sucks to be him.
And even Chris Jericho turned babyface on Cornette, saying he would be the first
person. And Kenny Omega. He may be the bridge that fixes the relationship between Jim Cornette and Kenny Omega. Brilliant.
Let's not go too far, Mags.
I still say it. I know we're going on a tangent, but I still say it. If I was AEW, I would move heaven and earth to get Jim Cornette in their AEW. He would be a heat magnet.
It definitely explodes things, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
More explosions than that exploding barbed wire match.
Yeah. So back to the match, and end of the match comes where Scott Steiner hits the Frankensteiner for the 1-2-3, and this is a sad day. This is the end of the Beverly Brothers. So
it's a what day? Did you say sad?
It's a new day, isn't it?
For me, it's just another Tuesday.
Oh, what a reference, Mags. Street Fighter the movie.
Awesome movie. I love that movie.
I just love it for Raul Julia. But this whole end of the Beverly Brothers thing, it's that meme that's going around of Jeremy Clarkson on Top Gear. Oh, no. Anyway.
Yeah.
I did like what one bit that Scott Steiner did. I think he ended up in a Boston Crab and Steiner just started doing push-ups.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't need no legs.
When you said it was a sad day, I thought you were going to say it's because Bobby Heenan's brain scan broke.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
I do wonder what amusing shape he was going to draw.
So we move to the next segment, and we see the promo package between the feud between Matty Jannetty, welcome back, and Shawn Michaels for the IC title. We see Jannetty come back and he picks up the mirror, goes to hit Shawn Michaels with it, backstanding, hits Sherry. She took that like a champ as well, by the way.
Yeah, I completely forgot this happened. I was watching it back this morning thinking, what the hell? But yeah, bloody hell, she hit that mirror.
Especially when you compare it to when the Warrior made his comeback in 96 and he was having a feud with Lawler, and it was like a photo frame. And
he wore a hat on purpose.
He wore a hat to protect his head. And there Sherry took a mirror like a champion. So yeah, fair play to Sherry.
It didn't even look like a gimmick mirror. It looked like a genuine mirror.
Yeah.
No, Sherry probably suggested thicker glass.
Yeah. It's cool. So we go to the second match, and it is for the Intercontinental Championship. Shawn Michaels against Marty Jannetty. Sherry's out first, and the gimmick during this match was whose corner we should be in. Marty came out. What was Marty Jannetty wearing?
It looked like somebody had tried to make him a white Power Ranger outfit out of Shredder leavings and a bin bag.
It looked like bits of rope. It was, but he had it in like almost a nappy and kind of leg braces style. Yes, this is. I mean, the Rockers and Marty Jannetty have wore some horrific ring gear. This is by far the very worst. Whoever signed off on this needs a slap.
So you'll be seeing a Young Bucks homage to this on Dynamite in 3 to 4 weeks.
There was where. Bobby Heenan was saying about how Shawn Michaels had taught him everything. He'd taught him how to talk to women. He'd taught him how to wrestle. He'd even taught him how to dress. It's like, if he's taught him how to dress, he hasn't done very well, has it?
Yeah, because Michaels' gear actually looked really, really good.
Yeah. This is when he started getting to that kind of like cut out sections of the white pants with almost like the fingerprint look. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah,
just the gold as well looked amazing to go with the title.
And this was a good match. I mean, Marty takes control early on, and eventually a dive spot goes wrong, and Shawn basically works the shoulder for the majority of the match. The one thing I will say though, Marty Jannetty, every time he done a comeback, how excited was he during his comebacks? He'd always like stamp his feet.
He thought it was still the 1980s where he was looking for the crowd pop every single time. But for me, this was a very good technical wrestling match. You had the long kind of emotional storyline with it. You had the little kind of a crease with who Sherry going to be aligned with. The in-ring was these were two really good wrestlers at the end of the day. As much as we kind of rag on Marty Jannetty for his recent transgressions, he was a really good wrestler, and Shawn Michaels is quickly becoming that kind of a showstopper style wrestler. So yeah, I really enjoyed this match. Thought it was a really top quality.
I had a bit of a different view. I felt that they felt a bit out of place in sort of the slow hold work a body part section of the match, because it wasn't what we'd normally seen from the Rockers.
Yeah.
To me, it just felt a bit jarring in that space. We'd gone for quite a long time.
Well, there's a good reason for that, and I recently caught it today, funny enough. So Marty Jannetty in an interview, so I don't know how valid it is. For the previous 3 or 4 days...
I don't know how valid the words coming out of the actual guy's mouth is. That just shows how far Marty Jannetty's star has fallen.
But he said, like, for the previous, like, week, him and Sean was working house shows. And this one night beforehand, he said, we had the best match of my career, like, on this house show. He said, unbelievable match. And he said, then on the day of the event, they said, right, we want Sherry to be involved in the match. And all the other matches they've been having on the house shows, she wasn't involved. And he said, it just completely destroyed the rhythm of the match. We still, you know, had a good match. But, like, I mean, I'll go into it afterwards, what Vince McMahon's reaction was. But, yeah, like they said, when Sherry got interjected into this match, it completely threw the rhythm off and the plans what they had, because Pat Patterson was put on praise on him for like days and days to Vince McMahon. So, but I'll get into what Vince said afterwards. But Sean takes control and Marty does his comeback, suplex to the outside, and Sherry slaps Shawn Michaels. Bobby's on form, saying she's just like perfect, except she's a bimbo and he's a male bimbo. And then he says to Shawn Michaels, grab her, slap a teep out of her throat. So it was fun. And
don't mince your words, Bobby, say what you mean.
Yeah. And the end of the match comes where the ref accidentally gets knocked out. Sherry comes into the ring and she goes to hit Shawn Michaels with a shoe, but accidentally hits Marty. And then Shawn hits it's not known as screeching music, it's the outside crescent kick, and gets the 1-2-3. And Sherry runs backstage to Gene, and she's screaming. Gene's like, get a hold of yourself, woman.
he looks a flat in the face. He's like, you're hysterical. It's like, there's nothing funny about this, Gene.
Shawn Michaels comes back. He starts screaming. Then Marty jumps on Shawn's back, and they fight backstage. No Rene Goulet. I was actually surprised, but we did see Pat Patterson, so we'll take that for now. And Max, we'll go to your thoughts on the match.
Yeah, like I said, I thought it was a really good match. I understand Rob's point about it not being a typical The Rocker style match, but for me, that kind of shows that there was maybe more emotion involved in this. There was kind of like more bad blood, whereas a standard Rockers match is essentially an old school Young Bucks match where it's very spot heavy. But I do concede the point to Rob. But yeah, I thought it was a really well told match. The finish, maybe I think Marty kind of over-egged it a little bit with that flip that he did after being hit with the crescent kick. But the stuff backstage to continue the feud, yeah, I thought it was really fun.
Cool. Rob?
There's a bit when the backstage and Jannetty jumps on Sean, and there's sort of a random orange on top of a box, and they go across the screen.
I spotted that. I was like, I rewound it. I was like, was that a frigging orange just flying out?
It nearly hits the camera as well.
I must have watched it 5 or 6 times because I was thinking, why is there just one orange on that box?
That's been planned. You know what it was going. I need something to throw at the camera. Well, we ain't got anything. Pass me that orange.
Have you still got that orange in your pack-up box?
Yeah. I was going to eat that. My mum said I've got to eat all my fruit.
Yeah, so That he only got four of his five fruit and veg.
Marty Jannetty afterwards going, has anyone seen that orange?
Where's my Satsuma? I killed a man, you know. I think I've broken Mags. Back to the match, though. There was some great commentary in this match, and I know it's Heenan and Gorilla, so it's going to be great, but that's like Heenan was at one point just earlier in the match saying you can't throw on a hold and you can't punch a man if you can't raise your arm. What a beautiful, intelligent move by Michaels. And it's just stuff like that in commentary that I really like, explaining why, basically why what's happening in the ring is effective and why it works. It's just part of what they should do. And there was just some, like I said, just some great quips back and forth between Gorilla and Heenan again as well. I can't remember what they said. I think Gorilla was raised a point about Jannetty not being left-handed, so why wouldn't he work the right shoulder? Heenan says, are you calling me a liar? And Gorilla just looks at him and says, yes. No ways and grace. Just you might be my co-worker, but I know you're a fucking liar. And some of Sean's selling as well. I think at one point it was fairly early on. Jannetty hit a punch off the apron, and Sean just spun in a 360 and landed face first on the floor. And it's like, what a great sell! He did his fuck it, I'm a tree sell at one point. Where he just ends up rolling backwards and just being vertical on his forehead.
Yep. And so yeah, after the match, sorry to say, but Marty is gone again. He gets fired the next day. So from Marty's side of the story, after they walk through the curtain, normally Vince would say to him, you know, great match, guys, and give him a hug and that, but he said, Vince said to the two of them, I'm really disappointed. I thought yous would do better. And Marty said, I don't know if he was joking, but he was being serious because Pat Patterson hyped the two so much. And so, according to Marty, Sean took Vince McMahon to one side, said, it's okay, can I have a word with you? And then proceeded to bury Marty, saying, but I found him.
I don't believe that for an instant. That is not the Sean Michaels that I know. He would never, ever politic his way in wrestling. So, no. Marty's lying to you there. It was all Marty's fault.
But, yeah, apparently he buried him, saying he found Marty unconscious in the locker room. Apparently Marty was genuinely just asleep because he was tired. And then the next day he got his walking papers. Few months after this, Mr. Perfect found out what happened because he was riding the limo with Vince McMahon, rang Marty up, said, right, you've got your job back and you're also winning the IC title. And on the episode of Raw, Marty did defeat Shawn Michaels to become Intercontinental Champion and quickly lost it within a couple of weeks on the house show when Diesel debuted. And then Marty was gone again until we popped up on another pay-per-view. But yeah, Marty, like I think we've all said, like, he's always been a great worker. He's always been talented in the ring. And if he wants to turn up, he could have been, like, I'm not saying he would have been great as Shawn Michaels, because Shawn Michaels, but he could have been a really consistent, like, upper mid-card babyface, you know, especially this area of wrestling, which you'll see how many departures is later on during the show. But he could have been in a notable spot going forward, but just couldn't get his act together, unfortunately. So that is Marty gone again, I'm afraid. So we go to the next segment, and it's another debut, Bam Bam Bigelow. This is his, it's Bam Bam's debut on our show, but this is his second run in WWE. And he's up against the big boss man. The thing I wrote down was a hoss battle.
Yeah, pretty much. And I have to say that only Bam Bam could get away with a flame covered onesie.
Yeah. And the theme song.
And singing his own theme song, yeah, in the ring, just like literally eyeballing the hard cam, saying his own theme song. Brilliant.
And the entrance graphic that looked like a design student trying to replicate a Dio album cover. I enjoyed this match a lot more than I expected to, though. Like James says, it was an absolute hoss battle, and yeah, just big fuckers knocking the shit out of each other, which is what I like in wrestling.
But not only that, but actual agile big guys, because both of these guys could move for like 300-pound-plus guys. So, again, I think this was a maybe it's certainly not the best match on the card, but it was a really solid match and a really good introduction towards for Bam Bam Bigelow. I always thought he was someone who was way ahead of his time. He would be huge now in wrestling. I mean, he was huge in ECW, and that was kind of like the genesis of the kind of wrestling we see now. So I'd love to have seen Bam Bam somewhere like GCW.
It'd have been amazing. I will say as well, Bossman, when you say about the agility of him, Bossman took a really nasty backdrop to the outside where it looked like he'd whacked his hip and his back on the corner of the apron. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that was looked some really nasty shit, and they ended up working it into the match quite well.
Well,
yeah, there was a bit where Bam Bam throws Bossman into the corner and he sort of, you know, goes over and falls out of the ring. And probably doing this match a disservice because I did think it was a really good match. But when he fell out of the ring, the only thing I could think was that ring apron really needs ironing. So crazy. It's like, you know, one of the tent peg events of the year for WWE. And they're just like, ah, it's wrinkled. Ah, what the fuck? Let's just use it anyway. But no, I mean, I can say, I mean, Bam Bam was like the prototype for like the Kevin Owens and the Keith Lees and, you know, all the big, really agile guys we see in the product today.
Yeah. But it was a good match. I enjoyed it. Bam Bam controlled the biggest part of the match with some bear hugs and that. And end of the match come where hits a big boot on Bossman and goes top rope diving elbow, which diving headbutt, sorry. And gets the 1-2-3. Here's a fun fact. Believe it or not, this is Big Boss Man's first clean loss on pay-per-view.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing. Like one-on-one for a clean loss. This is actually his first one. And he went out in style because this is the last appearance of the Big Boss Man. Another big name from the 80s. But this is the third match in the row. People's left, by the way. There's many more to leave. The reason he left, according to Jim Cornette, because the steroid trial was coming up, apparently Bossman didn't want that to affect his look because he was a correctional figure. And he's decided to jump over to WCW. He became the Guardian Angel and the Boss and many other gimmicks. Eventually, we will see him back again, providing the show still carry on in the Attitude Era, where he comes back with a bit of a new look. So hopefully we will be seeing Bossman again. But this is the Big Bossman gone, Max. Unfortunately, we haven't got Tolly. This would have been the perfect time to bring Tolly in, but he can give some feedback on Twitter, I suppose. But Max, how do you feel about the Bossman going?
I mean, I'm nonplussed about it, to be fair, but I know Tolly will be crying into his Welsh rabbit right now. Big Boss Man's a great character, been a great kind of stalwart for WWF. It would have been cool to see him win more in terms of championships, but as a character, he was so, so popular. I mean, everybody still remembers his theme tune now, some like 30 years later, so... Yeah, it's sad to see him go out on a loss like this, but that's the way of wrestling. And I actually really liked his character when he comes back as kind of like the security for Vince McMahon. So, yeah, if the show is still going, I'll be glad to see him come back.
Yep, Rob.
I think this iteration of Bossman was my favourite, to be honest. It's definitely the best music. I think it's probably because during the Attitude Era, when he came back, it was like, oh, he's got shit music now.
I don't care if he's a better wrestler. His music is shit.
But I mean, you know, seeing him in WCW with, you know, those Guardian Angel promos and vignettes and whatever, it was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What wasn't great?
Dan?
I'm kind of same as Mags. I'm not really fussed. I don't recall much of this this run of Boss Man from back in the day. So my favourite version of Boss Man was the Attitude Era, because that's the one, you know, that's the one I grew up with. But they've lost a really good hand. The crowd seems to be really up for Boss Man. at this time. I think we noted on the last recording we did, the match with Nails.
Yeah.
Where the crowd were just all up for him, but you know, he had his reasons. Fair play to him, and he went out putting over Bigelow, was an absolute, you know, legit monster. So yeah, fair play to the guy. I look forward to covering his return.
Cool. So next we see a package from the WWF Mania. Owen's chatting to Ray Rougeau and gets attacked by Razor Ramon. And then we go back and we see Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. And did you take a look at their table to see what they was drinking?
one had Diet Coke and one had standard Coke.
Yeah. Who do you reckon was on the Diet Coke? I would imagine it was Bobby Heenan. I can see him being
It's got to be Gorilla. Gorilla was on the Diet Coke, I reckon, yeah.
Yeah, Heenan was full caffeine.
Yeah, Heenan was full fat Coke, definitely.
Cool. And then we get a Razor Ramon promo, and yeah, it's great to see Razor Ramon, to be honest. I know this is his second show since we've been covering it, but it's great, and it's great to see him get some promo time as well. But that leads us into the next match for the WWF title, where Razor Ramon against Britta, and big boos for Razor, and yeah, big pop for Bret Hart. So Stu and Helen's sort of ringside watching, and I did enjoy the beginning where Bret gives his glasses to a kid, and then Razor comes over and throws his toothpick at the same kid.
That was genius. He looks at Bret and he says, "What's this?" He goes over and just launches toothpick at a kid. No health and safety fears there with her.
No. He had the glasses to protect his eyes.
People around him didn't.
That's true. And majority of this match, Bret works the legs, basically, which makes sense because that's his finisher. And really enjoyed this match. Bobby's on form with his commentary when Bret is in a predicament. And what do you call it? He says Bret's a quitter. His dad was a quitter. No, he's not.
What was it? At one point, he says, Gorilla says something along the lines of words of encouragement from Stu Hart, and Heenan chirps in with, "Yeah, I heard him say, eh. And then we get the classic, "Will you stop?"
Yeah. It was a bit like Gorilla says, "You've been wrong before," and Bobby Heenan just goes, "Never."
Yeah, there was a brilliant exchange where Heenan points out that Brett's favouring his ribs, and Gorilla just yells, "Of course he is," and he just, "Don't yell at me, big ape," and Gorilla just turns around, "I will knock you out." Stuff like that in commentary would normally be a distraction, but it was perfectly timed, you know, a sort of a lull in the match that it just made for great entertainment.
Yeah, he even sat saying underneath his breath as well, "Ape, monkey."
Yeah. Should we just rename this podcast the Bobby Heenan Appreciation Society?
You could literally do a podcast on Bobby Heenan and his quips anyway.
Yeah.
To be fair, we could. I enjoyed this match. It was a smart match, to be honest. Like I said, Bret was just basically targeting the legs to get him ready for the sharpshooter, and Razor was just hitting the power moves, basically. It was the one spot where Razor attempts to hit the Razor's edge, but Bret reverses it into a backslide pin for a two count. And yeah, end of the match comes where Bret reverses a test of strength into a pinfall attempt, which was great to see for a two count, but then quickly turns that into a sharpshooter and makes Razor Ramon tap. So thoughts on the match? We'll start with you, Rob.
There was one thing I just wanted to point out. There was someone in the crowd with a WCW foam finger, which I thought was incredibly brave to bring.
Wow.
But I'm probably the only one at that time. They probably weren't selling that much merch. One of the issues I had with this match is that it's all built around the fact that Razor's attacked Owen Hart and trying to get vengeance for his brother sort of thing. But it didn't feel like they had that sort of blood feud between them. They'd kind of up in the promos before, but then we got a pretty standard wrestling match out of them. I would have, you know, much preferred to have seen a, you know, angry, vengeful Bret Hart, you know, trying to avenge his brother than you know, just him coming down and out wrestling him.
Was this not the match though where it was actually meant to be Brett versus Warrior, and they actually they switched for Razor, like pretty much a last minute? So I think that's why there's not a lot of build then, and they just basically come up with it on the fly. I might be getting that wrong, but I'm sure that that was the rumor and innuendo around that time.
Yeah. Yeah, but originally it was meant to be Warrior. Warrior apparently was meant to tap out to the sharpshooter, which, as far as I know, Warrior's never tapped out in a match. So that would have been the first. And yeah, because, I mean, we'll have a look at the Rumble, how small the roster was. As obviously, Brett won the title from Ric Flair. So the only options for him to have a match on pay-per-view for the title would maybe Flair again, but he was in a heated rivalry with Perfect at the time. As for other heels, he's already wrestled Shawn Michaels. So do you wrestle Yokozuna or, you know, fast track Razor Ramon into the main event? So that's why Razor got the fast track into the main event, I suppose. But yeah, not a bad match. But Dan, what was your thoughts on it?
Oh, it's a Bret Hart match, so I could do my usual thing and wax lyrical, because you know I'm going to enjoy a Bret Hart match. But as much as Rob's right, it didn't quite fit the sort of the blood feud that they tried to portray it as. It was still a very, very good match, just all around. You know, built around, like I say, Bret working the legs, Razor working the ribs, a couple of just great shit in there. I think Razor had Bret in a bear hug for ages. Bret sort of fought out. You know, the third arm drop sort of thing, actually bit Razor's face to get out of the hold, which was sort of very unlike Brett. Razor tried to powder and Brett just hit the suicide dive.
Yeah.
It was just, that was just fantastic. And that really had, you know, really had Razor on the ropes. Even stuff like going for the 10 stupid 10 punches in the corner, Razor shoving him off after four. Brett jumped back in, got another five, got shoved off again, and then just decided to wind up a big and just to drop Razor for the first time. Just to drop him. Yeah. Obviously, there's more Hebner action Razor grabbed Hebner's legs and it all went down in a heap towards the end. But I really like the way that Brett applies the sharpshooter in the finish to this. Like I said, just grapevine in the leg while they're both down, just standing up and turning him over. And the just shock and horror as he's almost appalled from Bobby Heenan as Razor taps out. It was really good.
In the last 10 minutes or so, that was one of like the major kind of stories in this match. That I mean, they even mentioned it on commentary. Would Brett be able to get the sharpshooter on Razor, because they said he was all legs, and there were a couple of times where you thought, is he going to be able to get it? The 11th stuff. Then there's a part where he's trying to get it, and then Razor struggles to get hold of the ropes, and then we get that they kind of like mess up trying to do like the slingshot thing. But yeah, I thought this is two wrestlers who were technically so gifted in the ring to be able to put this match on with no kind of kind of backstory to it and still make you feel at least a little bit of emotion. I thought that's testament to both of them as characters. I would just love to have seen this with maybe 6 months worth of build and really kind of like build it up as a real blood feud and see where they could go with that, because unfortunately you don't see Razor a lot in this world title picture. But yeah, for me, it was a great match.
Yeah, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the only time on pay-per-view you actually challenge for the title. I might be wrong, but thinking about it, I think it is.
Yeah, it didn't have a lot of WWF title shots at all, so...
Yeah. Well, so
I think I have heard that before, that is right.
Yeah, which is crazy. But as Brett's celebrating, Bobby makes his way to the arena floor, and this is the highlight of the show, personally. the debut of Cap Scissors.
The way he kept saying it wrong, though, was so grounded. The Narcissus. I thought, is he pissed? Had he been like, knocking a few back and he just couldn't get the words out?
What did you think to Luger's?
It's the day you have narcissus, and I'm
fucking now. I love you, Lex Luger, the narcissist.
What do you think to his cape?
You've got big muscles, and glorious.
He literally nearly said it as well. Now, this was very homoerotic, like incredibly homoerotic. If that's your thing, you would have loved this. I mean, he was a specimen. You can't get away from the fact that Lex Luger was a physical specimen. I mean, charisma of a wet fish, but yeah. Physical specimen nonetheless. I think this character, I mean, it didn't really go over well. It was very much a fighting church, but this character was probably the closest to real life Lex Luger at this time than anything. I bet he spent so much time in front of the mirror just preening himself. It went on way too long. Like, way, I saw him jiggling his tits way too many times.
When he flexed his thighs looked pregnant.
It's just when he tensed him as well. There's like muscles there that he looked like he had like growths, like they weren't really meant to be muscles.
He had growths in places most people don't have places.
Exactly.
I loved it when Lex got onto the microphone. He said, "Lily Random West and the Mesomorphic League," and I was like, "What the fuck does that mean?" So I googled it.
It's a body type, like, isn't it? Mesomorph.
Yeah, it was like something being, everything being in order and that, like steady body or something like that. And I was like, well, to be fair to the guy, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he did. It was just like, sorry, Rob.
I was going to say, it really felt like Vince McMahon had written Bobby Heenan's part here.
Oh, he was in his ear.
This was exactly.
He had to be.
Tell him to flex. Tell him to get his cock out.
Just start slow stroking in front of the mirror, damn it.
Get on your knees, Bobby. Get on your knees. Pull that curtain over your head.
We don't want to see you.
So comfortable on pay-per-view, but imagine when it was just Lex Luger and Vince McMahon in Vince's office.
I bet Vince was like proper fanboy.
By bit.
The best thing is, as well, that all of this McMahon could reuse in about 2-3 years time for Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Just episode of Nitro when Buff Bagwell says, the total package Lex Luger, only 4% body fat. It's a shame it's all in his brain.
That's a great life. That's great.
Wasn't this coming off the failed WBF as well?
Yeah, well, that's the reason why he's only made his debut now, because obviously last year at WrestleMania 8, we saw him debut as part of the WBF, and the reason for that, in his release...
He shot from under half a pint of milk in about 10 gulps.
Yeah.
That fuck-awful promo.
But yeah, part of his release from WCW was that he couldn't go to WWE directly. So... Obviously, the plan was always for the WBF. Unfortunately for Vince, it didn't succeed. So, because he was a free agent, they might as well sign him. And during the end of the promo, he basically puts the challenge out to Mr. Perfect to set a match up between them two down the line. So, what do you think to the debut of the Narcissus?
It was a thing that happened.
Yeah, it
definitely was.
Hey, will you?
Well, talk about things that are happening next. We see Julius Caesar and Cleopatra.
Oh, fuck me!
He had a great voice. I'll give him that.
Do you think they were trying to nail down the point that this was WrestleMania at Caesar's Palace? Because I think they were a little bit too subtle with it for me.
I've heard that WrestleMania 9 did occur at Caesar's Palace, where you can where all your dreams will be fulfilled at Caesar's Palace. When WrestleMania 9 happens at Caesar's Palace, this Tuesday in Texas,
you can have loads of good food at Caesar's Palace.
Now, in all fairness, they've brought out a ridiculous, over-the-top character to promote this event at Caesar's Palace, but they did the exact same thing for Trump Plaza.
The the difference is the shade of permatan.
There goes my Donald Trump supporter audience. So another section of the audience has been gone.
and it wasn't me this time.
I've lost the Tories, now I've lost the Republicans.
Oh, wow.
So the eye puppet, and that was the one thing I mentioned. So this is actually the Royal Rumble where they actually bring the stipulation into play that whoever wins the Royal Rumble challenges for the WWF title at WrestleMania. So if everyone's thinking where did it start, it was this one. So we get to it. Royal Rumble promos, which I was quite upset about, to be honest. The budget is starting to go. It's like they're losing money.
I mean, there wasn't really, if you go back to the beginning of the show, there wasn't a real that Vince McMahon style introduction of everybody who's going to be in on the show as well, which we missed as I think they're penny pinching a little bit. I mean, it must be the price of mirrors were going up. Obviously, we're smashing one over Sherry's head, and the 15 mirrors needed for the narcissist assist. that's where all the budget went.
I'm the 20 kilos of silver for Luger's cape.
I will say.
I'll help you with that cape. Let me help you, Luke.
Why was Paul Bearer there?
I don't know. I've been told to do more Paul Bearer impressions, so I thought I'd strong arm one in.
I was wondering. Something had been deleted from this episode because it only the pay-per-view on the network only runs 2 hours 37.
Which, yeah,
they short. So it might be Paul Bearer strumming one off, as Mark said.
Yes, they cut my part, the bastards.
I'm sure, but yeah, to start the Rumble off at number 3 last year, but number 1 this year, Ric Flair. And number 2, the returning Bob Backlund. Fucking hell, Bob Backlund. He was 43, but he looked so old.
I mean, that hairdo did not help him whatsoever. That was a horrific hairdo.
Why do you think he's waddling about like a duck?
I mean, he's the MVP of the event as well. He's the he goes like an hour.
Fucking yeah, dark times, 1993.
We've gone from this being the greatest day in my life with a tear in my eye to Bob Backlund, soon to be crazy presidential running Bob Backlund being the MVP of the Royal Rumble,
and for some reason randomly shaking his ass about when they come out of the lockup or anything like that. What the fuck was it? Thing is, at this point, Flair and Backlund are just about the same age.
Yeah.
And they're making a big deal about Backlund's age. And now he's an old man and past it.
They do the same thing later on in the show with, is it Carlos Colon? And they say, this young guy's got a lot of energy. And I'm like, he's about 50 years old.
he was 45 and Backlund was 43.
Wow. And he was a young man, apparently.
We'll get to it later. Them two squares off. Number 3, Papa Shango. And then Ric Flair eliminates Papa Shango. And that's Papa Shango gone.
Went out having got his cue, though.
He actually finally got on cue, and that's when he got fucked off.
Hey, to be fair, in my interview I asked him, apparently it wasn't his fault, it was one of the producers, so the blame's not on his doorstep. But Papa Shango, he does some work in USWA. He does wrestle the WrestleMania 9 dark match against Tito Santana, but yeah, we won't see Charles Wright for a couple of years when he returns as Carmen Mustafa. So, Papa Shango gone.
I think Carmen Mustafa is one of his better gimmicks. I love that Ultimate Fighting Machine gimmick.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun gimmick. So, I'm sure we'll be seeing him again. As for the Papa Shango gimmick, I enjoyed it. And I mentioned this when I interviewed him. Even though it was there for only a year, not even that, a lot of people still got very fond memories of it. So, you know. Definitely a cult following, but so he's gone. And number 4 comes out. It's Ted DiBiase, and him and Ric Flair double teams Bob Backlund. And then number five comes out, Brian Knobbs, the Nasty Boys. Tells you how desperate the roster is. Brian Knobbs gets a massive pop when he comes out.
And he's running with a high knee lift for some reason.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know why, it just struck me as weird.
Just before Brian Knobbs came out, Bobby Heenan said when Ted DiBiase and Ric Flair were double teaming Bob Backlund, can you get arrested for beating up the elderly?
Yeah, I spotted that.
And both of them are probably, like you said, Ric Flair's as old as him. I wouldn't be surprised if Ted DiBiase wasn't around that age as well.
DiBiase was about 39 at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I looked this all up just to see.
Number six comes out, Virgil, and there he goes.
Curly Bill.
He goes straight for DBRC, and Knobbs basically eliminates himself as Ted pulls down the rope, and Brian Knobbs has gone from the Nasty Boys. This is the last time, I think this is his last match ever in WWE on pay-per-view, so after this, he joins WCW, and so end of Brian Knobbs. We'll talk about Nasty Boys later on when Sags comes out, but... Cool. And number seven, debuting Jerry the King Lawler. How did it feel seeing Jerry Lawler debut?
It was nonplus. Nobody cared. it was cool. He wasn't. This is where he wasn't an announcer yet, wasn't it? So it was all right. It was no special.
I can't give my exact thoughts for libel purposes, but he had a very impressive cape on as well, along the Lex Luger lines.
Bobby Heenan actually says that, you know, when Lawler comes out, that he's the host of Superstars. So I think they had brought him in so to do the backstage stuff and commentary and just wrestle very occasionally, which is a bit crazy when you consider he's having matches in WWE for probably 25 years after this point. Mm-hmm.
So that kind of leans into the point Jez was making about how threadbare the roster was. That they brought him in as an announcer and he had to essentially do a shift at the Rumble.
Yep. And number eight comes out. Max Moon, fucking hell, was great.
Speaking of great gear. And it was about two minutes in when I realised that was fucking Conan.
Fucking oh, no. Max Moon. Brilliant.
Was it Conan or was it what's it called? Not Paul Simon.
Conan. What's it called now?
That's Conan.
Yeah, it's definitely Conan.
Is it Conan?
Yeah.
I thought it was the other. Yeah. Not Paul Simon. What's it called? What's it called now? Paul Diamond. Is it Paul Diamond?
Neil Diamond.
Simon Diamond.
And Diamond.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Was it Paul Simon? Was that Simon and Garfunkel?
Was it Paul Simon?
I've just pulled up a picture to make sure it's definitely fucking Conan. I thought you had me like second guessing myself then.
No, I thought it's Paul Diamond. Conan. Paul Diamond. Paul Diamond played. It's Paul Diamond, he played Kato. In the Orient Express. I
would just love it if someone went to see Simon and Garfunkel and it was Art Garfunkel.
Paul Diamond.
Right. I don't know then. I thought it was Paul Diamond because he had a match with HBK a few weeks earlier for the IC title.
Yeah, Paul Diamond played was in the Kato mask, but this Max Moon, this match was definitely Conan.
Oh, we will treat Conan. Get his response.
Don't, because he'll ask you if you listen to his podcast first.
He already has. And I do, Conan, and I love it. So hits a nice drop kick on Jerry Law there, Paul Diamond or Conan anyway. And next out, number nine, Tenryu. I'm not a big fan of me Japanese wrestling from back in them days, so I can't tell you if he's a big legend or what. Apparently he is. Jerry Lawler eliminates Conan or Paul Diamond, and that's him gone. We never see him again.
He's gone back to outer space, never to be seen again.
that Simpsons Poochie episode where he goes, he died on his way back to his home planet.
And number 10 comes out. Mr. Perfect, massive pop for Perfect, goes straight for Ric Flair. And yeah, just keeps attacking him. Number 11, Skinner. Skinner actually looked a lot cleaner, I thought. It seemed like he combed his hair.
He brought Skinner, the crowd down as well, didn't
Skinner
he?
Skinner skinned the cat as well in this, which was absolutely amazing.
And as Skinner's making his entrance, Perfect eliminates Ric Flair, and Ric Flair is gone. The next night on Raw, him and Perfect has to lose a Leaves Town match, and Perfect defeats him, and Flair left on good terms. He said he was just ready to leave and left on good terms, and eventually he does return in 2001, I believe, leading up to the Vengeance pay-per-view, where he comes back as the 50% co-owner of WWE after the Invasion angle. So, yeah, Ric Flair gone. How's it feel, Ric Flair going there? I think he had quite a good run, I thought.
It's insane when you think about it. I mean, he's only there from, like, Survivor Series 91. Well, yeah. It's in the September of 91 when he makes his appearance on wrestling. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the pay-per-views, he's only there for, effectively, I guess, 7, because we got this Tuesday in Texas, didn't we? But, yeah, it's just insane the amount that he crammed in. Two-time champion, Royal Rumble winner during that point. You would, when you look back on it, you assume he was there for much longer.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And he goes back to WCW. He was a huge star anyway, but an even bigger star than he was when he left. So he really used his time in the WWF to really raise his stock.
And for all the departures that you've mentioned up to this point on this show, this is the only one that feels like a major loss.
Yeah.
And he is an absolute major loss. You're losing basically probably the best heel on the show at this point.
Yeah. Big loss. Hopefully, if we end up becoming that 2000s wrestling podcast, hopefully, unless we start reviewing WCW stuff, so we'll see.
Seen enough WCW so far for podcasts.
Yeah,
just tune into the That Night Is Wrestling podcast podcast channel, and you can hear us reviewing Ric Flair and WCW. And we're very quickly marching on to 2000. We didn't want to break the news to you, but we will be covering that too.
Cool. So number 12 comes out. Coco Beware, Bobby Heenan, who called the cab?
I didn't even catch that. That is brilliant.
And what was with Coco's run to the ring? It was like, is all the limbs were everywhere, and he was, I don't know what the fuck that was.
That was him attempting to fly to the ring.
Ah, right, got you. I thought he was just being stupid.
Maybe a bit of both.
As he's making his way to the ring, Perfect eliminates Skinner, and Skinner is gone. We will be seeing him in the next review, but under a different gimmick, we could say. But as for Skinner himself, yeah, that's him finished. So can't say he's a big miss. But yeah, I enjoyed his match with Brett at this Tuesday in Texas. I will give him that. That was an entertaining match.
The only thing that was entertaining about this Tuesday in Texas.
Oh, that's not
bad. That's not true. Like, okay, we hit Macho and Jake. Come on.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
it's hot my brain soup.
This Tuesday in Texas saved 1991. Do you remember Survivor Series?
No. Error 404, file not found.
This Tuesday in Texas was like WrestleMania X7 after we watched Survivor Series 91. Yep. Number 13 comes out. It's Samu. What was I saying? Samu from the Head Shrinkers. Number 14, the odds-on favourite, the Berserker.
I mean, this was his gimmick, lobbing people out of a ring. How he never won the Royal Rumble is beyond me.
And he was walking to the ring and he was holding his hand out and pointing at it as if he didn't know what it was.
It was very kind of a Nazi, almost Nazi-esque, the way he was pointing.
What is this arm foot? I don't understand it.
And Mr. Perfect then back body drops out Jerry Lawler, and but then DiBiase and fucking Coco turn fucking heel, both came up behind. And with the help of Jerry,
two-faced taxi driver.
Yeah. And yeah, they came from behind, and with the help of Jerry from the outside, eliminated Perfect. Fans wasn't happy with that one.
What a fight Perfect put up on the apron, though. That actually looked like a proper scrap and a proper fight for survival on Perfect's part. It was, as far as eliminations go, it was a proper realistic one.
And there was a young Bill Alfonso was one of the refs as well.
Yeah, and it's surprising me how well he's kind of working as a babyface. I mean, he'll never touch what he was like as a heel, but he seems to be playing the babyface role quite well, Mr. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's the fact that he's so good in the ring. There's a lot to like about him. So he's one of those people who only takes kind of really subtle changes for him to be a dastardly heel and a white meat babyface.
He's just really fucking good.
Yeah,
simple as that. And we're at the halfway point, number 15, The Undertaker, massive reaction for him. Throws out Samu, throws out Tenryu. I would say Tenryu's gone, but he does make a return for next year's Royal Rumble.
there was a great call by Heenan as well. By the time he gets to the ring, it'll be time for WrestleMania.
That had me absolutely crying. That was a brilliant laugh.
If only Bobby knew how slow those entrances would get.
Yeah, he'd be fucking livid if he saw that, the WrestleMania 30 entrance.
Oh, the match against Roman when he had to come up through the ramp halfway down and it still took forever.
I think Virgil has already been eliminated at this point, but I don't think they even caught it on the camera.
Oh. They probably just said, get out. Go on, fuck off now, Curly Bob.
Going back to it, it was when Perfect eliminated Flair. Straight after that, Virgil was holding Jerry Lawler so Perfect could punch him, and Perfect just blanked him, and just left him there holding Lawler, looking like a right dick.
I can't believe that he's letting his West Texas redneck brother in down.
it wasn't an amicable split, I would assume then.
And as that was happening, Berserker body slams Backlund on the outside. Number 16, Terry Taylor, who gives a fuck, comes out.
I've got the Royal Rumble 93 Wikipedia page, and Virgil is eliminated by the Berserker, so he's essentially just yeeted out of the ring. Then,
well, I just love the fact that Terry, who gives a fuck, Taylor.
I completely missed the Virgil elimination. Completely missed it.
It wasn't shown. I went back to try and see it. They just didn't bother showing it.
It wasn't like he was in disguise as well with what he's wearing.
It was in disguise. Like Virgil sneaking in.
El Hijo de Repo Man.
he was the real Max Moon. That's what it was. That's why you didn't see him. He died on the way back to his home planet.
Faces of Virgil.
Virgil, Curly Bob, and Vincent, all in the same rumble.
And Terry Taylor goes for Coco, but DiBiase eliminates them both, which was good. Taker then hits a choke slam on DiBiase and eliminates him. And I forgot to mention that's the end of Terry Taylor and Coco as well. So,
Jesus Christ, there was just a mass culling.
Yeah,
it's a good job this happened at the Rumble and not like a couple of weeks before. It'd have been a 10-man Rumble.
And people bitch about the releases nowadays.
I know. Imagine the amount of hashtags back then.
I saw Terry Taylor heading towards the booking committee and thought he had to hoof him out of the ring as fast as he could.
And Giant Gonzalez comes out. As he's coming out, Taker eliminates the Berserker, and then Giant Gonzalez basically just beats the shit out of Taker. what do you think to Giant Gonzalez? He's very tall.
And we'll such realistic muscles.
And body hair.
Yeah, the hair. Yeah. The hair in places where a man shouldn't really have that much hair. He was probably one of the very worst wrestlers ever. I am not looking forward to reviewing that match.
I can't wait to talk about that match. Because I know it's a crap fest, but this, when Gonzalez comes out here and you look at the sheer size of the guy, you think he is, for all the suit looks crap, he's a spectacle. You sit up and you take notes, you think, what the fuck? This guy's a legit 7'7", because I think he was a basketball player in Argentina, and he dominated The Undertaker in ways that we've certainly not seen on the show, and I doubt we've seen on any WWE programming up to this point. At the time, that'd be a big thing.
Mm-hmm. He was a big influence on the Great Khali. I can say that.
I mean, to be fair, at least the Great Khali could move and wrestle.
He could do a brain chop.
Tree chop, man.
Yeah. And Damien Demento comes on at 17 as Giant Gonzalez eliminates Taker. And Taker is out for the count as Giant Gonzalez walks back. 18 IRS. And 19 Tatanka. Big pop for Tatanka. Taker eventually gets up and leaves.
You've missed something there, James, just before Tatanka comes down. So you've got Gonzalez is hitting Taker's leg against the ring post. So they have to send people out from the back to break it up. And Rene Goulet makes an appearance.
Hooray! He's here. Wouldn't be a WWF pay-per-view if we didn't see a bit of the old Rene.
He's got the real streak in wrestling. Has he missed the show yet?
It'll be a sad day when he does.
Yeah, I don't know when he leaves. So we'll wait and see.
I think it's that is... it goes, unfortunately, but yeah, we've got a few more years of Rene.
And number 20 comes out. These entrances are coming thick and fast. Number 20, Jerry Sags and Nasty Boys. 21, Typhoon. Nothing happens. 22, Fatu. Rikishi.
The Heenan has a quality line about Typhoon. He calls him Tugboat, and then he says, Typhoon. Oops, I mean Buffoon. The last time I saw him running was when he had, it was a free buffet, something like that. I thought that was a banging laugh.
Also, I reckon that Heenan getting Typhoon's name wrong and calling him Tugboat is proof that WWE have edited all their footage to edit out the fact that he was WWF champion at this point.
And number 23 comes out, the earthquake, and he goes straight for Typhoon, which was weird. I don't like it when tag teams go for each other. It makes no sense. And eliminates him. And this is the end of Typhoon. Uncle Fred, the tugboat, how do you feel about Typhoon going?
Yeah, he gives him the thumbs up as well once Earthquake eliminates him, and he's like, all fair in the Royal Rumble. You see Typhoon give him the thumbs up, so he must have known that it was over, essentially. Yeah, it's a shame because he seems to have been around in WWF forever. For him to not be there anymore will be sad. But at least we'll get Shockmaster. Which is brilliant.
Would you say that's the thing he's most remembered for than anything else?
He's fallen on his arse!
It's a shame that's like the highlight, because he's had a good career, but that's like, that's what he's going to be remembered for. I need to get him on the show one day. I need to get him on. I will make it happen one day. But then the number 24 comes up, Carlos Colon, Monsoon. A lot of fire at this youngster.
We've missed, I think we've missed an entrant as well. I think Fatu came out after Typhoon. Oh, did you? Oh, well, it was about as memorable as his entry into the Rumble then.
came out, they did a close-up of Stu and Helen Hart. So often in wrestling, when you get family members, they're just there for that match. But obviously, Stu and Helen Hart were just staying there for the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They were sticking around for the free bar, for the meal afterwards. Stuart was there on WWF's dime. He was spending.
Bobby Heenan in the Brett Razor Ramon match did say if Brett loses, Stu Hart will have to pay for his own dinner.
Stu was at ringside watching the Rumble, stretching.
And Carlos Colon does get elimination. He eliminates Damien Demento. Damien Demento is
what
gone.
What a thing to put on your resume. What did you do in your time in the WWF? I eliminated Damien fucking Demento from the Rumble.
Yes, the Damien Demento.
I wonder whatever happened to Damien Demento.
That'd be a great guest for the podcast.
It certainly would.
I mean, think about it, he made history. He's actually in the very first main event of Monday Night Raw against The Undertaker.
Very true.
I was actually debating to review the first Raw, but I thought, I didn't know if it was worth reviewing a lot, but maybe as a bonus episode down the road. Number 25 comes out. This roster's fucking slim. Number 25, El Matador, Tito Santana. I think he's been in every Royal Rumble up to this point.
And he got a compliment from Heenan. Mm-hmm. He actually got a compliment from Heenan. He said that with Santana's condition, he could win the whole thing.
And this is the first time you've seen Tito Santana as El Mato with a smile on his face as well. He actually felt like he was happy to be in this Rumble.
He knew he was getting a good run in this Rumble. He looked at the rest of the ring. I was like,
"But I've got a chance here. I could win it all." Arriba!
And Bob Backlund eliminates Fatu. And number 26 comes out. It's Rick Martel. Goes straight for Santana. This is like deja vu at every Royal Rumble. Every year. What was it now? Earthquake eliminates IRS. And then number 27, the debuting for our show anyway. He was at Survivor Series, my bad. But anyway, Yokozuna comes out 27, eliminates Tatanka. And then he eliminates Carlos Colon. Carlos Colon is gone. So he's another one who's gone, that youngster.
He'll come back. He's got time left in his career.
Go and learn your trade on the indies, sir. We'll have you back.
Might give you a few dark matches.
Yeah. If we don't have you, we'll have your son and nephews.
And we won't use them either.
Number 28, Owen Hart, the Rocket, comes out as Yokozuna eliminates the Earthquake. And, I actually enjoyed this part of the Rumble, Earthquake going up against Yokozuna, just these two massive people just, like, going for it. Eliminates Earthquake. Earthquake actually takes a little bit of a break during this time. It's not the end of him in WWE. We'll see him again. I forgot which show we do, but it's not the end of him just yet, but we won't be seeing him for a few pay-per-views. 29 comes out. The odds-on favourite, the Repo Man. So he's got a good spot here, 29. Is it his year? We'll have to wait and see.
It isn't his year.
And everyone in the ring tries to eliminate Yoko. It's a spot of the Rumble I've always enjoyed, you know, everyone just trying to eliminate the fat fuck of the Rumble.
There was like, what, six of them trying to get him out at one time.
Yeah. And, number 30, Macho Man, Massive Pop, and, wow, you're looking at the people left in the ring, you're thinking, damn, compared to a year ago, the roster. Yoko eliminates Tito Santana, and I'm sad to say this is the end of El Matador, Tito Santana.
Oh, that's actually a huge shame.
Is it?
No, not at all. Thanks for showing up, Tito. You were always good.
If not a bit grumpy. I'm amazed, Mags, that you're letting Macho Man slide for his immediate unprovoked attack on Repo Man.
I mean, the guy's dead. You've got to give him a little bit of respect, I suppose.
I thought you'd just said all's fair in the Rumble. Jesus Christ.
Well, it is, unless you're attacking Repo Man. Then you're a bit of a wanker.
But my bad, I forgot that caveat.
They had been feuding, though, because I think Repo Man stole Macho Man's hat.
No, he didn't steal it. He repossessed it because Macho Man didn't keep up his payments on that hat.
How much reckon those hats cost?
Like, at least $4. At least.
He got it from the Littlewoods catalogue. He was paying
over 104 weeks.
Littlewoods, oh yeah.
And Owen Hart drop kicks Jerry Sags and Nasty Boys eliminates him. And yeah, that's the end of the Nasty Boys. The original plans, they was in line to face Money Inc. at WrestleMania 9, but then, you know, Hulkster brother, gotta get my brother Brutus over, and took their spot. And that's the end of the Nasty Boys. Thoughts on the Nasty Boys leaving?
It's funny that it's Hulk Hogan that takes him out of a spot, because they've followed Hulk Hogan around for their entire career, haven't they?
Yeah.
Hogan.
It feels like they've gone just as they were gaining some traction, because I think, you know, the last show they were getting a decent babyface pop. They got a little bit here. And I was amazed when I was looking through the sort of stats for the Rumble and seeing that Jerry Sags was in there for over 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was in the final six as well.
Yeah.
That's all fired. It's frustrating.
Whereas Brian Knobbs was in for what, a minute or something like that, just over, perhaps. So it just shows that which of the Nasty Boys the WF actually gave a shit about.
Mags, you do Brian Knobbs a disservice. Do not disservice Knobbs. He was in there for 2 minutes 58 seconds.
Oh well, I'm sorry. I take it all back. I apologise unreservedly, Mr. Knobbs.
Knobbs only lasting 2 minutes 58. We've all been there.
He had to leave early. He had to get his Knobbs tattoo redone.
He forgot to put the K on it.
And Owen Hart basically flies out the ring when Yokozuna hip tosses him. It actually legit injures his knee, and he's out for a few shows because of it.
I was actually, Mrs. Mags actually popped into to not watch it, but she caught that bit, and even she said, "Jesus Christ, he landed that weird on his knee." I went, "Yeah, that's a bad injury. That really had to have hurt because it kind of like buckles underneath him." Yeah, that was it was not good.
Yep. And after this, the Macho Man eliminates the Repo Man, and this is a very sad day because this is the end of Barry Darso.
Why would you do that?
I said it was a sad day.
No, but you could have just glossed over it.
Celebration of Incoma. Celebrate.
It's a celebration. Mean. I hope he listens to your podcast before he comes on for an interview and he rinses you for that.
He tries to repo the shed.
Just the podcast in general, it ends up being Barry Darso's, that Barry Darso podcast.
If you had your way, Mags,
I'd happily listen to every episode. Unironically.
But yeah, he leaves WWE, he goes to WCW, and
he's not long there, because is that when he becomes the Blacktop Bully?
Yeah, and doesn't he do the King of the Road match or something like that with Dustin? They both get fired over it.
For basically bleeding in a match where they were farting in the back of a moving wagon, and yet they were expected to not bleed.
On a pay-per-view called Uncensored.
Well, when you say it like that, it just sounds utter bullshit.
Yeah. WCW.
Wrestling.
And we're down to the final four: Backlund, Martel, Macho, and Yoko. And Bob Backlund eliminates Martel. And then Yoko eliminates Bob Backlund. We're down to Yoko and Macho, but Bob Backlund does get a standing ovation by the fans. And
he punished, I mean, as much as we've ragged on him, and he shouldn't be in there, he put in a shift. That guy put in an absolute shift of work there.
I was going to say the opposite, though, because the previous year, Ric Flair hadn't taken a back step for the entire match. You know, everyone who came in attacked Ric Flair. Bob Backlund goes and has a nap on the floor for half of this rumble.
Backlund sleeping.
They all just felt sorry for him because of how incredibly old he was at 43 years old.
Hardly anyone goes to attack him. He gets two eliminations in an hour. That's like the worst.
It's not the worst.
It's legal. Jericho. It's dead.
Jericho holds that honour, because I actually did a bit of a dive into this to see people who've been in a Royal Rumble as long as Bob Backlund and you know how many eliminations they've got. And everybody who's been in a Royal Rumble for an hour, Flair got five eliminations, he lasted over an hour, and then Triple H, Chris Benoit and Rey Mysterio all got six. Chris Jericho is the only other wrestler to have been in a Royal Rumble for an hour or more and only got two eliminations, and that was in 2017.
Well, the lazy bastard.
You have a nap on the outside as well. Should be packed off if you're sleeping during it. I mean, talk about sporting presentation.
I mean, it couldn't get as worse as Road Dogg's tactic of literally just lying down in the corner and hugging the bottom rope. That is the epitome of sleeping whilst in a rumble.
Or Jerry Lawler hiding under the ring.
And we're down to Macho and Yoko, and end of the match. And I've always hated this fucking ending. Savage hits the diving elbow off the top rope onto a flawed Yoko. Goes to pin attempt him, and Yoko, because he just can't move anymore, just presses him over the top rope from the floor and wins the rumble. I hate this ending. Makes no sense.
Mrs. Maggs didn't understand it as well. She's like, was he made of a trampoline? How did that end up with him throwing himself over the top rope? She said, that's ridiculous. But Savage loved to eliminate himself in Royal Rumbles anyway. That was his thing.
As stupid as going for the pinfall was, because it's not a veteran like Savage is not going to forget that he's in a Royal Rumble and forget that pinfalls don't count. At least Savage made the best of it, like you say, flinging himself over the top rope and making Yoko look ridiculously strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As soon as that happened, you could see the fans start to scream out, and they turned the noise of the crowd down. You actually hear sort of a step in the noise. It's not even a they're reducing it gradually. It goes from quite loud to very quiet. And that's Kevin Dunn on the effects. So it clearly wasn't going over well in the arena.
They had to edit out several thousand people all saying what the fuck in unison.
it's just all the stamping of people going up and down the stairs. That's what the noise was.
Yokozuna wins the Royal Rumble, and he's going to face whoever's champion at WrestleMania 9. We see a quick highlights package of the show, and then to sign off, we see Yoko and Brett face to face backstage, showing everyone basically what's going to be the main event for WrestleMania 9.
Is it? Or are we going to get a swerve?
Swerve, bro. So, a few things. Yeah, like you mentioned at the top of the show, Mags. This is the last time Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon on commentary together. Legendary pairing. Personally, I think it's my favorite pairing of all time. I think Bobby Heenan, I think he's only got one more show left with us. I might be wrong, and I think Gorilla does pop on another show in the future, but it's just, you know, we mentioned it the last few shows, it seems like it's an end of an era. And yeah, the amount of the stars from the 80s that's gone now, it's, you know, they're all gone. And I forgot to mention it last show because I thought he was appearing on this show, but Sean Mooney, friend of the show, is gone as well. You know, him, Gene, and Todd Pettengill's my top three interviewers, and Sean Mooney's gone. So sad to see him go, but, you know, a younger guy is coming into the show who is a new friend of the show, and we'll be seeing this guy at WrestleMania 9. In total, 18 wrestlers are gone after tonight.
Wow. Jesus. I mean, that's a Royal Rumble on itself, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
I think last year at the 92 Rumble, 14 wrestlers was gone, or 13. Basically, a simple steroid trail. Everyone could see where everything was going, and such a mass exodus.
Got out of Dodge. Yeah, got out of Dodge.
And abandoned ship, yeah. Why wouldn't you?
And when you can... when you compare the star power of 92, of the Royal Rumble, compared to star power in this Rumble, I mean, well, it's night and day.
as soon as Taker left, the whole thing just fell completely flat until near the end. There was just such a drop off and such a lull, and as you say, just full of people that nobody could really give two fucks about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I pointed out on last year's show the amount of people who had a legit chance of winning that Rumble. You had Hogan, Flair, Macho, Sid, Roddy, Taker, and I'm sure there was a couple of more there as well. You compare it to this Rumble, Taker, maybe Macho, Flair, and obviously Yoko, who won it, but yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Yoko did have the most eliminations. He entered that 27, but he did get 7 eliminations. Backlund, 1 hour, 1 minute and 10 seconds. Terry Taylor, 24 seconds.
That's 23 seconds too long.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'd give Vince Terry, get the fuck out of there. You've been in there long enough.
But yeah, so that's the 93 Rumble. I'll be honest, I can't say it's probably one of the worst Rumble matches I've watched. There are a couple of spots, but man, there was like not many stars in this Rumble match at all.
It's probably up there with 91 for being like the worst Rumble for me.
Yeah. I think 92 is head and shoulders above the two what we've recorded. 90 was a fun one, what me and Rob recorded. 90 was a good Rumble, but yeah. This is probably the worst out of the four that's been reviewed up to now. Just a couple of spots was okay, but for a Rumble, I wasn't really excited. This was a Rumble card where the undercard actually saved the show, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This Rumble's it's middle of the road. It's a Rumble match. It's inoffensive. It's worst crime is being forgettable. There's nothing in there that happens that's bad. It's just there.
I think for me, the glaring issue, and it's always going to be compared with 1992 Royal Rumble, and that's always going to be a hard kind of like shadow to get out of. But that 1992 had so many kind of feuds that were going into that Rumble, and feuds that you saw carrying on in that Rumble. In this one, there was barely any feuds, no kind of real beef between any of the wrestlers, and I think maybe that's one of the issues. Obviously, the talent level is very, very low compared to 1992, but you can always make it work if there's enough storylines and there's enough like meat on the bone. And for me, I just don't think that there was.
It's a bit like in football when Man United got not got rid. Alex Ferguson was retiring. You didn't want to be the manager that took over from Alex Ferguson after he did something so great. You want to be the person who takes the man who takes over from the man who takes over from Ferguson. Yeah. So you don't want to be the Rumble after one of the greatest Rumbles of all time. You want to be the Rumble after that. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to be the rebound. You want to be the rebound off the rebound.
Or at Man U, the rebound off the rebound off the rebound.
Yeah. Man U still want to be Alex Ferguson because they've never replaced him. James moving to the shed.
I'm just getting recharged.
I knew it. I was actually going to ask you at the beginning of the show, what is your battery percentage?
I've got 5% left. Yeah, so sorry about that, everyone. But yeah, Yeah, I mean, good undercard. You know, the opening tag team match was a good tag team match, especially for a new debut in tag team. IC title match could have been better, but it was still a good match. WF title match still delivered. Not one of Brett's best matches, but still a good match, what we've seen. And obviously, we saw the debut in Narcissus, which was a highlight.
I suppose rating the show. Like I said, undercard was good. Enjoyed the undercard. Some fun matches, but the Rumble match itself, not terrible, but there's not much you're going to remember from it.
It's like Dan said, it's forgettable. It's not something that you will go back and watch over and over again with much fondness. But there was nothing there that really kind of was offensive.
Yeah, the opening tag match was fine. It was all right. I enjoyed seeing the Steiners for what it's worth. The IC title match I thought was very good. You know, it might not have gone the way that Sean and Marty wanted it to go, or Vince wanted it to go, but I thought it was pretty bloody good. Bossman and Bam Bam delivered way more than what I expected. And Brett versus Razor, yeah, it wasn't one of Brett's better matches, but that still leaves it being way above what most wrestlers can produce. Mm-hmm. And the Rumbles, you know, it's a middle of the road. You'd probably get, you know, it's a 5 out of 10. It's a C, you know, C plus maybe. So yeah, it was one of those where if you put it on, you're not going to have a bad time, but it'll never be your first choice.
Yeah.
Cool. So I suppose we'll get to the awards. The first award of the night, match of the night. Not the Rumble. So yeah, I'd probably lean towards the IC title match. Everyone knows I'm a massive art fan. I enjoyed it, but I suppose I did enjoy the story, what was going into the IC title match. And I mean, we've ragged on Matty Jannetty, but I've always enjoyed watching Matty Jannetty wrestle. He was always capable in the ring, and Shawn Michaels is really establishing himself now as his like solo heel now, and he's doing great work with the IC title. So yeah, I think for me personally, I'll probably go for the IC title match. Matt, what about you?
For me, it's Brett versus Razor. For being able to essentially book that match with such short notice, I thought they did an admirable job of it. It's never, like we've said, it's never going to go down as one of Bret Hart's best matches, but if you had any other two wrestlers in that position and they pulled off a match like that, you'd be looking at calling it a 4.5, 5-star classic. So, yeah, for me, it's Bret versus Razor.
Cool. Hello.
I'm going to go with Bam Bam versus Bossman because I think that kind of exceeded my expectations, whereas aside from the excellent orange work in the Intercontinental Championship, it's a bit odd to me that this sort of didn't feel suited to that role they were given, and I just would have wanted to see more anger and vengeance in the Brett Razor, and obviously we had Sleepy Bob in the Rumble, so yeah, I'm going for Bossman versus Bam Bam.
Cool, and then
I was really torn between Brett versus Razor or Sean versus Marty, but I'm going to go with Sean versus Marty for the IC title. Just because it had that build, it had that story. I thought it was a really muted performance from Sherry because, you know, the story demanded it, but I thought she still played a role impeccably, really added to the whole thing. And just, yeah, it was just a really entertaining match. And, you know, particularly the flying Satsuma was a highlight.
And so next one we'll go to is moment of the night. So Max, what was your moment of the night?
It's the flying orange. I mean, it's the only part of the show that I had to genuinely pause and rewind because it's so hilarious. So yeah, I mean, it's a weird pick, but yeah, it's seeing that orange fly towards the camera at breakneck speed.
Well, I mean, Mag's got the right answer there. I've given it to Yoko and Earthquake squaring off.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's really decent.
Yep. Dan?
I've sort of telegraphed mine because I went on about it before, but I'm giving it to Giant Gonzalez taking out Taker. Purely because we'd not seen, you know, never seen anything like that. We'd not seen anybody do that to Undertaker. And yeah, it's going to end up in a dumpster fire, but at that point, you're seeing that. You've seen this legit giant come in, fuck up the unfuckupable, and just leave, just imposing his will. So, Giant Gonzalez for me.
Well, for me, it's a weird one, because even though I give the match of the night to another match, my moment is actually the moment where Brett transitioned the Test of Strength into the pinfall attempt and then quickly transitioned that into the sharpshooter. I just thought it was so fluid the way he'd done it. So I don't know if that counts, but we've all got split answers anyway. But for me personally, that I think that was actually my moment of night. And next one we'll go to is the MVP. Max, who's your MVP?
Yeah, for me, I don't think there's a wrestler who really stands out. For me, it's Gorilla and Bobby. I think they were. It's almost like they knew that this was kind of like the end of the road, and they wanted to go out on the very best. They were muted when they needed to be. They really kind of they've always been able to kind of like sell the match, but also keep that comedy going. It's Bobby and it's Gorilla for me.
Cool. Rob?
I'm going to go for Yokozuna. Seven eliminations. I think they've really created a new credible threat at the top of the card with Yokozuna coming out of this. So, yeah, Yoko for me.
I've actually gone for Sleepy Bob. He might have had a nap in the middle of it after getting powerbombed by Berserker onto the bare concrete. But Backlund came out to cricket. And he lasted for over an hour. And by the end, people actually cared that he hadn't lasted longer, or even won it. So
they cared that he did that.
Either way, they cared. So yeah, give it to Bob Backlund.
Cool. I think I'm kind of joining Mags, Gorilla, and Bobby, but Bobby in particular as well, because on commentary is great, and I don't care what you said, that segment with Lex Luger, he made it so fun. He was great.
In a very disturbing way.
and nobody gave MVP of the night to the Satsuma.
Cool. And next of all, everyone's favourite, the mullet of the night, and there's quite a few on display tonight. Max, who was your mullet of the night?
It's got to be the narcissist Lex Luger's mullet. Glorious body, glorious muscles, bouncy titties, and a mullet to end all mullets. So, yeah, I'm going with the Lex Express.
Awesome. Rob?
I'm going for a mullet that was relatively short on its own, but would have been giant on anybody else. I'm going for Giant Gonzalez.
That mullet was 7 foot long, you know.
I've gone for the only haircut on the show that was the epitome of business at the front and party at the back, to the point where he had no hair on the top of it or the sides of his head at all, but all of it at the back. It's Damien Demento.
Yes. What a shout.
I'm in agreement. There was a few good things when I saw Damien Demento. I was like, that's all it was. It was literally just a mullet.
It was unreal.
Oh god, we've got to track down Damien Demento just to talk about. He was basically the pioneer for Aleister Black, wasn't he? Malachi Black.
I can't wait for Malachi Black to shave his head and just leave the bit at the back.
Well, lads, I enjoyed this. Like I said, great undercard. Rumble, not as great, but still enjoyed it. And yeah, really enjoyed the show. And we're fastly approaching the new generation era now. So got plenty of more mullets to look at. But before we get there, Max, tell everyone about your shows and tell them where they can find you.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, this is one of the highlights of the month for me. And even though we watched an incredibly awful Royal Rumble, it's still been fun to get back with you guys and just shit on it. But you can follow me on Twitter at PodfatherMags. I've got way too many podcasts and contents to list off, but the two I really do want to kind of push are A Change in Attitude, where I've definitely not gimmick stealing from Unbooking the Territory and going back to the Attitude Era and kind of reviewing it in 2021 as with my friends Ore and Tanner. And then I also want to mention that Radio Techers and quite a few bits of content that I put together, we've actually gone solo from Shooting the Sportsy. So we've now got our own YouTube and Twitch channel. So we're looking to really push some new and interesting content on there. So it'd be cool if you could go to youtube.com/RadioTechers or whatever the link is and give us a follow on there and a sub.
Awesome. And Rob, what about you?
Yeah, so you can find me at UTT Rob. It's really more about the mutuals than the followers. So if you want to follow, well, I'm more than happy to follow back. You can find us on Booking the Territory, as Max kindly mentioned earlier. We're either on the same podcast channel as that 90s Wrestling podcast or on our own channel, which you can search UTT Podcast on Booking Territory and your favorite podcast providers. We have just released a bonus episode featuring Kiss on Nitro on our own channel exclusively. So best off subscribing to both, really.
As I am.
Cool. And then?
You can find me on Twitter at DanGriffin21. As Rob said, I'm on Unbooking the Territory with him. But on my personal account at DanGriffin21, I'm just tweeting wrestling that's 6 weeks out of date and at the minute just whinging about how hot it is and making incredibly crap jokes. So if that sounds good to you, pop along. I'll follow you back as well. I'm just there to have a laugh, really.
Oh, and yeah, if everyone wants to follow me, you can follow me on the Twitter at 90s Wrestling Pod, and follow me on Instagram, that 90s Wrestling Podcast. And we've also got the Facebook group page, that 90s Wrestling Podcast. And yeah, if you're watching us on YouTube, please give us a like and subscribe, really does help us out. And if you're listening to us on podcast form, same again, hit subscribe and you won't miss out on any of our future reviews, or go to the archives, check out the past reviews. But we've had some pretty fun episodes. And yeah, if you want to check out wrestling interviews with many of the names who we mention in these reviews, check them out, please. So until then, we'll catch you on the next one. Bye.